Hour number two of The Drive underway. It's Fan Run Radio. Marcus Young is in with the top four at four. Marcus, what do you got?
Thank you, Russell. At number one, the Big Orange Caravan is going to be having its tour rolling through in April and May as five cities in Tennessee have been selected. The Tennessee Athletics Big Orange Caravan will have Danny White, Josh Heupel, Rick Barnes, and Kelly Harper. They're going to be going through stops in Memphis on April 18th, Nashville April 19th, Knoxville April 20th, and Chattanooga May 1st, and the Tri-Cities in May 3rd.
Barnstorming. Getting out, shaking hands, meeting the people, eating the rubber chicken, doing the thing.
You want to know why he's got an 87% approval rating? He gets out there and does what he needs to do.
I thought he was waiting for us to respond. I wasn't sure. I think it's kind of cool that they do this kind of stuff. I know Titans do it as well.
I've never actually been to one of these events, but I know that it is popular. The year or two that they canceled it under Fulmer, like, people were upset. There were people, it's like they look forward to going to these events every year, and so it's pretty cool.
Meeting the coach, man.
And it's interesting to me that this year all five stops are inside the state borders. I know in years past they've gone to Nashville and, or I'm sorry, Atlanta and Charlotte a couple of times, I believe.
That's holding guy goes to these things.
I'd say so.
What are you trying to say? I mean, I think all kinds of folks go to these things.
I'm sure they do, but that's holding guy is definitely there.
Would you like me to go as a liaison to one of these events?
Yeah, we need to send you as our beat reporter.
I can do that.
You have a hat to wear?
Yeah, you're gonna
a drill bee
press card.
You can't be showing up in your gym shorts and t-shirt as an official representative of
the
drive.
The tiger.
Yeah, I've got
hoodie.
My childhood tiger hoodie. Yeah, no, I'll play the part. I'll get a drill bee and everything. You know, I'll do what I got to do.
What?
It's like that old school hat that they.
It's a type of hat, right?
Oh, with the card in it.
Yeah, the whole press. Yeah.
There you go. Danny White. What do you say? Huh? What's the scoop? Give me a big scoop.
Oh, I would have said Daniel
White. What's
the story?
Jimmy Olsen over here.
At number two, NFL clubs will be tabling the Thursday Night Football flex proposal.
Why?
So, while the NFL owners opted not to vote on a rule that would allow games to be flexed into a Thursday night kickoff, they agreed yesterday to modify the existing rule and allow teams to play a maximum of two short week games. That means that while some teams could play two Thursday night games, others would not have any. Back-to-back Thursday night games, such as a Thanksgiving game followed by a Thursday night game the next week, would only count as one short week game. So many teams could wind up playing three Thursday night games.
Okay, maybe unpopular opinion here. You guys tell me. I could do without the Thursday night NFL game.
Yeah, most of the players in the league don't like it either.
Yeah, I could do without it as well, and I know that the players could really do without it.
Players don't like it. Coaches don't like it.
It's not safe.
I know
them.
TV likes it because they can sell money, and it's not, you know, the toothpaste out of the tube. It's not going back in. And usually my policy is the more football, the better. But I'm fine with Monday night football, and you're going to get a college game on Thursday nights most of the time. Now we've got high school games here locally on Thursday nights. You got high school football on Friday, and usually good college games on Friday as well. Then Saturday and Sunday it's the weekend. It's for football in the fall. But
yeah, I didn't like the whole I don't like the idea of flexing games to Thursday night. That's a lot different than changing kickoff from either 1 p.m. or 4 p.m. East Coast kickoff time to the 8 o'clock slot on Sunday night football.
I don't have a problem with them flexing the games to Thursday. If you're going to do it, if you're going to play on Thursday night, put good games on. I mean, that was part
of the problem
this year.
Yeah, the problem is, Russell, you can't logistically.
The games were unwatchable on Thursday night.
I mean, you have to know, a team would have to know, I don't know how long would be fair to know out ahead of time that you were
going
to be on a short week.
2 weeks.
Patrick Mahomes, one of the players who seemed to be very frustrated by this, tweeted the news with a facepalm emoji. When Goodell was asked about Mahomes' reaction, he quote said, I don't think we're putting Amazon, who hosts the Thursday night games, over players' interest. We look at data with respect to injuries and impact on players. I think we have data that is very clear. It doesn't show higher injury rates. Who knows?
What's it show on the not overall injuries, but head injuries, which they'll never let us know about? That's where the rub is. You don't; those guys don't need to be hitting, knocking heads that hard, and that it's just there's not enough time to turn around to recover.
It's very true. At number three, the 2023 Hall of Fame for the NBA have some of their finalists being elected, as Dwayne Wade, Dirk Nowitzki, Greg Popovich are amongst the finalists to join the Hall of Fame of 2023. You also have Paul Gasol and Tony Parker as a couple of the international stars, and WNBA legend Becky Hammon have also been voted into this class.
Popovich still coaching, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like the NFL where you have to be 5 years done. Or is,
that doesn't seem like it.
Just going as a player. D. Wade and Nowitzki been done for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe Wade has.
I would imagine they are first ballot guys, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, they're, I mean, their rivalry others. In particular was pretty. You don't think Gasol is a first ballot?
No, I mean, we talked about this when the Lakers retired his number a couple of weeks ago. I just feel like he's very good. I don't know, man. It just seems like there's a big drop-off to me from some of those numbers up there. Wilt, Magic, Kobe, Gasol? I could be wrong there. I could be wrong. And Hall of Fame, I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at the numbers, because he did most of his damage during a period where I did not watch a ton of NBA games.
Fair. And finally, at number four, Shohei Ohtani is planning to be making an MLB record of $65 million in 2023, including endorsements, according to an annual list published earlier this week by Forbes magazine. The amount includes the one-year $30 million contract extension that he received as a part of an agreement to avoid salary arbitration. It's a lot of money.
So he's making the money, that's including endorsements. Obviously, mm-hmm. He's big in Japan.
Especially after, didn't they win?
They won the World Baseball Classic. Yeah. I imagine he was huge even before that. But you said he's working a one-year $30 million contract that was...
It was to avoid the arbitration.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I guess it was just like
he could make more in the future.
Oh, yeah. He's a good player.
Very good. Ridiculously good. Spectacularly good. He's fantastic for sure. Thank you, Marcus. That is the top four at four. Russell Barrett and Marcus with you. Chloe is here helping us out, taking your phone calls today at 865-546-8200. Our buddy Josh Pate from the Late Kick is going to be stopping by here in just a few minutes to talk a little college football with us. Looking forward to that. Let's go to the Big Orange Phillies phone lines and talk to Brad in La Follette. Good afternoon, Brad.
What's up, W? Bear, Marcus?
What's going on?
Not much. Just enjoying this weather.
It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
Oh, man, it's gorgeous out. Russ, you was talking about Hickory, North Carolina, and what a retirement destination it is. I'm glad you kind of coming around to me and seeing the way of thinking. You trying to push Barnes out?
Not at all.
Yeah, it's a retirement community. He'd probably enjoy it.
He's a very young and spry 68 years old. He's not going anywhere, Brad. He's not going anywhere.
You know, Barnes is the granddad that, you know, shows up ready to go hiking. Got to go hiking with granddaddy.
No, you're right. He's we keep on making fun of Kentucky about giving Calipari a lifetime contract. We've done the same thing with Barnes. He's got a lifetime.
No. Calipari's buyout was over $50 million this year. Barnes was less than half that.
If we can't afford to pay $25 million to buy him out, that's a lifetime contract, though.
But nobody is having that conversation. This is the thing that you guys don't understand. And I love you, Brad. I really do. But you guys are in such an echo chamber in such a bubble, you don't realize what a minority you are in. Nobody, literally 1% of our fan base, we ran the poll, wants to fire the guy. Like nobody, that's a conversation nobody is having. Like you just went to the NCAA tournament for the umpteenth year in a row. You've had three guys drafted in the past two drafts. You might have another one or two go this year. You won the SEC tournament last year. You won an SEC championship a couple of years ago. You have 7 25 win seasons in the history of your basketball program. Rick Barnes has four of them. In what world are we buying this guy out and firing him? It's fantasy.
Exactly. It's a lifetime contract.
Yeah, but what you guys don't understand in the 1% is that the rest of us don't really have a problem with that.
It's a tournament sport, guys. That's my thing. It's a tournament sport. Basketball.
It's a tournament sport to you guys because that's the only thing that you guys concentrate on about the program. That's where the breakdown's occurring, like to you guys. But to the majority of the fan base, everybody approves the job he's doing. I'll be sad to see the guy go. I like having 25 win seasons. I like being in the top five all during the season. Would I like to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament? Hell yeah, I want it for him. But
Do you think he's going to get hit with any hard questions on his caravan tour?
No, because it'll be a university run deal. I mean, what hard questions would you like for him to answer?
I don't know. I mean, development of players. Why didn't you have B.J. Edwards prepared?
Well, I mean,
right off the top,
you can. It's a great article. Grant Ramey did an interview with B.J. If anybody wants to know what was going on with B.J. this year, he pretty much lays it out for everybody. And that's where he stands. You know,
I was talking to somebody this morning, a trading text with somebody who's in coaching at the college level, and he told me, look, this stuff about B.J. is ridiculous. If Rick Barnes thought he could help the team, he would have played him. It's a coaching decision. And I guess we'll find out if the kid can play or not next year, or maybe we won't. But I don't know. Like, me just on paper, yeah, I would have liked to see him a little bit more. But was B.J. playing more going to get us over the hump against FAU? No. Come on, man. Do you really believe that?
When does the caravan take place? What's the dates on that?
It's next month.
Yeah, so it's going to start. The first one will be Memphis, April 18th. Nashville, April 19th. Knoxville, April 20th. Chattanooga, May 1st. And the Tri-Cities, May 3rd.
So, Russ, let me pose a hypothetical. Because I've never been to one of these caravan things. I'm assuming you have, Russ?
No, I said last segment, no, I have not been one.
Okay.
This segment, like 5 minutes ago, I said I've never been one.
It's been a whirlwind call from Brad and the Follett. So, like, if Brad, Phil, and Jake showed up at one of these things, can they, you know, you guys really going to stand eyeball to eyeball with the guy and ask that question?
Here's the thing that's funny about it to me is – I've been in the room with Barnes while he's talking ball, while he's got film going and he's explaining what they do. And you hear all these phone calls, people calling, well, you should have done this. Well, you should have ran zone. He's got to update his offense and everything. All the people that are saying that, if you got in a room with Rick Barnes and you're talking X's and O's with him, you wouldn't understand the language he's speaking. I guarantee you. Like the guy knows basketball like nobody's business. I don't know why it doesn't work out better in the postseason for him than it does, but the haters want to portray him as this doddering old man who has no idea what's going on, and it's just completely inaccurate.
Rick Barnes making four appearances in the month of March, that'd be a nice changeup. See,
that's all they got, and then they got cheap shots. They got cheap shots for days.
I mean, I don't know. It's a cheap shot. Like, frustrated as anybody else. Yeah, he should probably have more than one Elite Eight appearance in his last 10, I think, trips to the tournament. Should probably be a little bit higher than that. But again, the thing I've been saying for the past couple days is, like, I think Tennessee should have won the game last year against Michigan more than I think they should have won the game this year against Florida Atlantic.
I agree with that 100%.
And I know on paper that doesn't make any sense because Michigan's Michigan, Florida Atlantic's Florida Atlantic, but FAU's in the Final Four this year, and it's no fluke.
No, they're really
good. The Michigan
team
last year wasn't very good, and Tennessee just
– Tennessee was the hottest team in the country going into that thing last year.
Well, and every offseason, I think you got to look in the mirror and ask yourself, what can we do better? And I think the team wore down. It is interesting that against Michigan last year and Florida Atlantic this year, kind of controlling that game midway through the second half, and then the bottom fell out in both games at roughly the same time.
Yeah. The under eight in the second half, basically.
Well, a little bit earlier than that. But I think that is that just pure coincidence or are your guys getting tired, wore out? I don't know. I think you got to look at everything, see how you can get better, tweak things, and go forward. But the Rick Barnes buyout conversation is just – I mean, we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. You call the show – it's your phone call. But I'm going to tell you when you're talking crazy talk. Don't get mad at me. Like, it's just – it's not a conversation that anybody is having. It's a loud conversation on Twitter and on talk radio. But when you take a look at the entire Tennessee fan base, you realize that it's a – like fringe doesn't even begin to describe it. It's like fringe of the fringe. It's just a very small minority of people that want to actually see a coaching change. We got to take a quick timeout. Josh Pate of The Late Kick is going to jump in here when we continue. It is The Drive on Fan Run Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back. The Drive continues. Fan Run Radio. Russell Baird, Marcus back with you on The Drive. Go back to the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. Josh Pate is standing by the Late Kick YouTube channel/podcast joining us. Good afternoon, Josh. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. It's just warm enough where you can be outside in shorts and a tank over here in Nashville. So I'm taking advantage of what is a very, very rare mid-afternoon off.
Nice. Josh Pate, sun's out, guns out. He's ready to go, man. It's summertime. Josh, I saw your video about the Tennessee Spring Mood Tracker earlier this week, and I was watching it. You said Tennessee is supposed to compete for a national championship, ideally, at its peak. How close do you think they are to being in that conversation?
I wouldn't say not there. I've said they have inserted themselves again into that mix. And to be very, very clear, because I had to end up straightening this out a few times, when you say that, like when I say a team should be a perennial title contender, that doesn't mean winning a title every year. That could mean like Ohio State. Ohio State fits that description to me. They've won one title since 2002 or whatever. But that doesn't mean they haven't been in the mix. So that's where I see Tennessee in an ideal world. I did not buy into, as you well know, that notion that the game had passed them by and college football's landscape had shifted. It was just bad hires. That's the long and short of it. So I think last year went to show that they are a little bit further down the road, and maybe that road wasn't going to be as far as people were led to believe, but they're a little bit further down that road of getting it back there. It's also just crazy what happens when you have an electric offense and a hungry fan base. It's crazy what can happen.
No doubt about it. And, you know, another video I watched of yours, speaking of Tennessee, you had your top 10 current programs, and Tennessee did not make it. No complaints from me. Would another 10-2 type season, Tennessee, another step in that direction, would that jump the Volunteers over, you know, like Oklahoma, Utah, some of the teams you had down towards the bottom of your list?
My guess would be they'd be firmly in the top 10, because all I do with that thing, all a program is to me is just a rolling sort of 3-year snapshot, the past 3 years. So it's not a prediction thing. And I think we had Tennessee like 14th or somewhere like that. I can't remember exactly where. They weren't far away from the top 10, but it's like with LSU. You know, I took a ton of heat from LSU folks because I didn't have LSU in the top 10. Had them at number 11, but, you know, 10's the magic number. you know, they remember last year, and Tennessee fans, as they should, they remember last year. With LSU, the previous 2 years in that three-year window I care so much about were either 500 or worse. So there's a difference between rating what a team just did and where a program is. But with Tennessee, yeah, you put together back-to-back double-digit win seasons, or just even if you're 9 wins this year. But the losses are extremely hard-fought one-possession games against a Georgia or an Alabama, and you're recruiting, and your portal looks good, and Nico does look like the quarterback of the future from whatever we see of him this year. Yeah, there won't be 10 programs out there better than that at that point, and I feel confident in saying that, not even knowing what the rest of the country does this year.
Talking with Josh Pate of the Late Kick this afternoon on The Drive. And you know, Josh, Tennessee story last week came out. They're opening up the 2024 season against NC State in Charlotte. It wasn't met with hostility by Tennessee fans, but it was just kind of like, really, Charlotte? Haven't we done this before, NC State? Do you like these neutral site games to open seasons, or do you think that deal has kind of run its course?
No, they're lame. I liked them a long time ago because of the novelty aspect, I think, but they're very lame. They don't excite anyone. The only people it excites are, you know, people with a vested interest of the location of the game itself, and that is not 99% of your listeners and 99.9% of the college football public. So, no, they're lame. I've been to several of them. There is no matching an environment like Neyland Stadium. I'd rather have a home-and-home and put one of them in NC State Stadium than to play it in Charlotte. I cannot say. Don't they open against Virginia and Nashville this year, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of it. And I could walk to that venue from where I live, and I'm still not a fan of it. So I've spoken about it a lot. I really hope that we're starting to see a phasing out of that approach. And I think if you look at the scheduling practices, at least in the future, we've seen a lot more true home and homes pop up on the schedules. But I won't rest until we've totally eradicated this. We've got a few neutral sites. We've got, like, the Red River game. We've got Georgia, Florida.
Sure.
We got a few of them, so they're never totally going away, and I'm okay with that because that's the tradition of those games. But who in the world was banging down the door of either athletic director saying, give us NC State, Tennessee, and Charlotte. We demand it.
Yeah, no, nobody. And those stadiums, and I'm a Titans fan. I love going over there for games and stuff. And it's cool every now and then. You know, Tennessee was in the Music City Bowl a couple of years ago, and that's fun. But, I think if you pull Tennessee fans, Josh, I think they'd rather see Tennessee play Kent State in Neyland Stadium to open up the season than see them play NC State in Charlotte.
It's just crazy to me. We treat these seasons like they're Major League Baseball seasons. If you play 162 and 81 of them are at home, yeah. Throw me a series down in Cuba somewhere. Throw me a series in Australia. That's fine. But you've only got 8 of these games in most years. And, I mean, think about the Arkansas fans. Arkansas has seen one of their games in conference play be made one of those neutral site affairs against A&M in Dallas. And then they rotate a game down in Little Rock. So in Fayetteville, they get like 6 home or – hold on, it's – sometimes they get like 3 or 4 games in Fayetteville. Last year was one of those years. It's crazy.
Now, I must say, I've been to a game, an Arkansas game in Little Rock. I saw them play LSU down there the day after Thanksgiving a couple of years ago. That was pretty cool. That had a vibe kind of, you know, you mentioned the cocktail party, the Red River Shootout. That was more akin to that than two random teams playing in a pro stadium. But generally speaking, I'm with you. It's nothing beats the college atmosphere. And you make a great point, Josh, about you only get 12 of these games, man. You want to make them as special as you can, right?
Well, I would think so. And, you know, the one exception that you could deal out to that game in Little Rock is Little Rock is not an NFL market. You're not playing in an NFL stadium. Nothing called War Memorial Stadium is where an NFL game is being housed. I can promise you that. There are very few luxury suites. And so, yeah, I'll give that an exemption, just like I'm very willing to give OU Texas the exemption. I love that game, actually. That's one of my favorite games to watch and has been my favorite game to go to, believe it or not. But, yeah, just throwing college games in these lifeless, compared to a college venue, a lifeless NFL stadium is not for me. It is not the way I would see the sport best run.
Speaking of college football environments, I saw you had an article or a video about Clemson. There was a 247 article ranking the best college football atmospheres. It's list season, Josh. Couldn't get here soon enough. You had a piece about Clemson being an underrated environment. What is the best place you've seen in your travels?
I just actually mentioned it. It's not a home environment, but that OU-Texas game 2 years ago is as crazy as anything I've seen. LSU at night against Alabama would be up there. Whiteout at Penn State, I was up there for that a couple of years ago. Just amazing. Just an amazing atmosphere there. Tennessee-Bama last year. You're not topping that. So those rattle off the top of my head. But what I was saying about Clemson is, you know, Clemson fans will very quickly tell you, hey, we've got one of the best game day atmospheres in the sport. And I've been up there for a game, and they're not wrong about that. The difference is you get to see these other places showcased regularly. No one ever sees big games happen at Clemson. And I put that theory to the test last night. I had our research guys go back, and it didn't take very long. I just said, hey, find me the biggest Clemson home games, like the ones that the entire sport had to stop what they were doing and watch. NC State last year was kind of billed like that. They had that Lamar Jackson game against Louisville in 2016. There was an FSU game in 2015. That's it. Like, the list is so short. And so Clemson fans, they see this place every Saturday. But most of the time, America's not seeing it, because it's not Clemson's fault. It's the rest of the ACC's fault that we should see Miami or Virginia Tech or Florida State. Those should be huge matchups that come in there every other year, and it just hasn't been that. They're always favored by 24.5, and it's a sleeper, 30-3 at halftime. So what Clemson folks think about their venue, I don't think the rest of the country thinks it, and it's just because an entire generation of people have now grown up not seeing, like, Death Valley be electric at night, even though it's fully capable of being that.
Says more about the ACC and the lack of quality around them than it does anything about their program, right?
Absolutely. It's inexcusable. I mean, Clemson has so thoroughly done their job, and the rest of that conference has so thoroughly underachieved that it's this consequence that you really would never see coming. Because you would think when Dabo gets there, or not gets there, when he gets elevated to head coach, and then that program starts to elevate. If you were to ever tell anyone in 2013, hey, a couple of years from now, they're going to go on a run where they're playing in the title game like 4 out of 5 years, you would think, oh, well, the rest of the ACC is going to have to elevate, right? And that's just not right. That is not what happened. And as a result, Clemson hardly ever has big games at home. And the follow-up to that was, this year could be the exception. Number one, because Clemson's feeling a little wobbly right now, so no one's totally sure what we're going to get from them. Florida State comes in there, and Notre Dame comes in there this year. So this schedule this year already looks better than the past few years combined.
Josh Pate with us. Josh, last thing, we'll let you run. Jimbo Fisher back in the headlines. Statement, I guess it was earlier this week at spring practice. He says, everybody runs the plays. Everybody runs the same plays in college football. Josh, I'm no coach, but that seems like an absurd statement to me. I watch games, and it seems like the offense Tennessee runs is very different from the one that Georgia runs, for instance. Is this just a lot of spring fan freak out about nothing, or is this a sign that Jimbo might be in denial about the need to modernize his offensive approach?
I was all ready to ignore this stuff. I had already told myself. I had tried and preconditioned myself. All right, Texas A&M, spring football, Bobby Petrino's in there. People are going to make mountains out of molehills. And I was ready to ignore it. But when he said what he said, not about the play calling even, when he said what he said about philosophy and diagnosing why they've been bad, it caught my attention. Because he was popping off last year about that stuff, about how it's not a play calling issue, it's not an offensive issue, it's an execution issue. And that means he is honestly assessing this thing, and the only thing he sees wrong is guys just aren't doing what they're supposed to do, and if they'll simply do what they're supposed to do, this offense will work as good as any in the country. I don't believe that. At the fundamental core of what he does versus what other schools do, I don't believe that's the case. I do not believe that they possess that ability. And look, then we get into the whole play calling thing, but yeah, I don't think it's something to ignore. I do think it's a big deal.
I just like how Jimbo, when he came into this league, you're thinking, okay, very competent coach. He's probably going to do well at Texas A&M, but he's not going to provide a lot of narrative in the offseason. And what is it, like the third offseason in a row? He's like ruffling feathers, saying goofy stuff. He got into it with Saban last year, and now it just shows me, Josh, this is the guy's – he's kind of feeling the pressure, feeling the heat a little bit down there.
He would never admit that. I think he is. And I think he feels a lot of – look, I think if you ignore the outside for a second, this is a guy with immense amounts of pride who really believes in what he's saying. This is not coach speak. And so he's feeling pressure from himself, too, to kind of validate what it is he puts out there every day.
Well, and he's already been – you know, bringing Petrino in has to be – and like you said, he would never admit this, but it has to be – a little bit of a shot to his ego. You know he did not want to do that. He wanted to do it himself, and look, it's the Jimbo Fisher offense, and, you know, even if they get it turned around, you know, Petrino's going to get all the credit, so it's still an amazing dynamic to watch play out this year.
Yeah, and when they asked him the other day, hey, is Petrino going to call the plays, and he wouldn't let the guy finish the question, which in fairness is his MO, but he didn't even let the guy finish the question. And it was all, well, you know, I mean, that's the plan. That's what we plan on doing. But he wanted to get back to that whole, it's execution. And in theory, he's right. Like, that is how plays end up successful. They are executed the right way. No one thinks anything other than that, I guess, if you understand the game. What he was saying, though, was he's saying, you guys are essentially making a whole lot out of who's calling the plays. And in reality, it's on the players. And that's true. I just don't think the players have been best equipped to succeed out there.
It's funny, these coaches, they can never – I love it when they won't tell you who calls the plays. they just will not answer the question. Heupel has done that here for 3 years. Like, he won't say who calls the offensive plays, and nobody – obviously Tennessee fans are quite satisfied with the offense, but they'll ask him, and he'll say, oh, yeah, it was Golish calling the plays, or Halsley's going to call the plays. Sometimes he won't answer. He's wishy-washy about it. But then you watch the games, Josh, and you know how fast Tennessee's offense goes. Heupel's down there with the sheet over his mouth, talking into his microphone after every play. So, again, I'm no coach, but I'm assuming he's not ordering pizza.
Yeah, there is no carryout being ordered. So, he probably almost looks at those questions and says, if you can't figure out what's happening just by watching TV, yeah, then I'm not really going to entertain this question any further.
We appreciate you entertaining us. A few questions from us here this afternoon. Josh, we will do it again soon. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful afternoon in the Mid-State.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys.
Josh Pate of the Late Kick. Check him out on Twitter, at Late Kick Josh. He's loved, though. He's got the YouTube thing down to a science, man. Those 10-minute videos, it's just...
He's really
good, like,
at it.
It's a bag of potato chips, man. You ain't watching just one.
No.
You click on one of those, you half an hour later, you're like, what have I been doing?
Eating a whole bag of potato chips and you've already gotten into the ice cream. You're still listening to Josh talk. It's mesmerizing.
Stay with us. The drive continues. Open up the phone lines here, 865-546-8200. If you want to get on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines, check out Big Orange Phillies in Halls, 6625 Maynardville Pike. They'll have the Final Four on Saturday. They'll have UT baseball on tomorrow night and Friday night. And, of course, the national title game next Monday. A lot going on out at Big Orange Phillies. A lot going on here on Fan Run Radio. We're back with more right after this. Fan Run Radio, the drive continues. Josh Pate, 247 Sports, the Late Kick. Bear, what did you learn?
Oh, all kind of, that was great. Great stuff. Everything from his three-year, kind of the way he does his top 10 programs, which makes a lot of sense. He made a lot of good points there.
I don't see how you could say that Tennessee is a top 10 program right now.
No.
They were a top 10 team last year. I think that you got to do it back-to-back. I mean, we've seen a lot of flashes in the pans over the years.
Yeah.
And I think if we're all being honest with ourselves, in the back of our mind, you could turn around and go 8-4 this year, and then it's like, well, then all of a sudden you're not back to where you were, but it's like, okay, we're not where we thought we were either.
Cost you a little bit of momentum. We keep talking about momentum. We've got it right now, and you don't want to do anything that's going to give up any momentum on your trajectory, which I think we're trending up. So a lot of good stuff about Texas A&M. There was so much good stuff. I'm trying to remember it all. The Texas
Jimbo's
A&M.
Really – isn't that weird? A plain-spoken guy. It never struck me as a loudmouth, egomaniac guy when he was at Florida State. He comes in the league, and I'm just thinking, okay, it's a really good hire by A&M. They're going to he'll probably get him going pretty good. And this is like, I want to say the third offseason in a row where he's just sort of inserted himself into the national dialogue. I don't know if this is national dialogue or not, but Kiffin clowned him on Twitter today so it gets more run. But he was asked at a press conference last week about his scheme and whether or not he's going to modernize thing, and he cuts the guy off and says, it's not scheme, it's execution. He says, everybody does the same thing. There's not a hill of beans between anybody as far as what goes on.
A hill of beans? What?
Yeah, well, he's saying, like, everybody runs the same plays. And basically, everybody's doing the same thing out there. And to me, that's what makes college football so much better. It's one of the many things that makes college football so much better than the NFL is the variety of styles that you see. You don't have to be X's and O's guy to realize that the way Tennessee plays offense is totally different than the way Michigan plays offense, which is totally different than the way Ole Miss plays offense or the way Texas plays offense. Or, you know, you get the option teams in there. Like, you have all these different styles and little variations of it. The NFL, everybody does the same thing. Like, you can't tell the difference between the way that the Titans offense and the Patriots offense works. It's all pro style. It's all the same formations and stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, I read an article just this morning. It was on a draft analysis, one of those things with Hinton Hooker at number five, and said that part of the reason the scouts have had a hard time with Hendo is because it's not a knock. They're not saying he's a system quarterback, but not a lot of guys like him that, you know, Heupel, nobody really does what Heupel does.
I think it's a fair criticism.
It is a total, like, in its purest form, the air raid.
Well, and it was like Marcus asked me, and you know my thoughts on, we talked about Hendon yesterday, and I told you why he's a legend, and he should have a statue or street named after him someday. That's how much I love that dude. But Marcus asked me during a break, he's like, we're talking Titans. He said, would you use one of our second rounders on Hendon? And I was like, probably not. Probably not, man. And I'm just not 100% sold on him being a long-term championship caliber starting quarterback in the NFL, partly because of the system. I hope I'm wrong, man, like, because I love that dude and wish him all the best. But I'm certainly not using a first-rounder on him.
I mean, it just takes one team to fall in love with the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, especially in light of that, if you can believe those reports. Interesting thing about that Will Levis thing, real quick before we get to Big Josh and on the phone lines. You know, you have to – I look at stuff like that, even though, like, I clown Will Levis all the time, but you never know, because this is getting around to where, like, the really dirty stuff starts happening and manipulation of where guys go in the draft, people saying everybody's got an agenda, ulterior motives about – putting something out like that, maybe to push his draft stock down.
Some guy told Tannenbaum they love Hooker. They're just like messing with the Seahawks and the Raiders and everybody who's like thinking about taking quarterback down there in that 5-10 range in the draft.
It's all like it's mind games, and they've got to figure out whether or not, because when you look at it, with Pete Carroll being the head coach up there, like if they did draft him at five, like honest to God, it wouldn't surprise me.
Well,
if that franchise took a chance on somebody like him.
And in fairness, there's probably some mind games being this thing that's going around about Levis today.
Yeah.
Like that's probably that might be the, you know, because I keep seeing the Raiders taking him, I think at seven.
Yeah.
Is where they're at. And it's
– I mean, it might be a team that wants to draft Levis.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's the Raiders. They might be in love with him, and they're just trying to put that out there so that
– Terrible interview.
The Texans or whoever up top will
– And I'm here for it. Like, I love this part of the NFL stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's so duplicitous.
3D underwater chess.
Heck, yeah. But at the end of the day, what could happen is Pete Carroll may have interviewed Hendon Hooker. And, I mean, would it surprise you if the Seahawks – that, to me, seems like a perfect fit would be the Seahawks with Hendo.
Especially if he can just learn behind Geno for at least a year.
Not a lot of pressure up there. It's not a big market. Fly under the radar. Just work your craft.
I saw a mock of him going to the Lions in the second round today. And it's like, ooh, no. Like, even if he would be able to just, like, learn behind Goff and they've gotten a little bit better. But,
no.
Like, no, the Lions.
I kind of feel bad when I see guys traded in. But, I mean, quite frankly, we sent them one of the best that ever played here. And I felt like if you know, they were lucky enough to get our guy in number one in the first round, and I'm a little disappointed they didn't do more to get him a ring.
Let's get to the phones. Big Josh is up next. What's up, Josh?
Hey, Russ. What's going on, brother?
Hey, man.
I like that Pate guy, but I actually went over at Clemson this year and watched the game. It's kind of one of them bucket list things. You want to check out a stadium. And I seen him play Syracuse, and that was the most overrated, underwhelming game day experience I believe I've ever seen. I mean, the heel, you know, the whole deal. I mean, it's just.
Do you think it would be better if you had been there for, like, a night game and they're playing Florida State? Don't you think it would have been a little bit more jazzed up?
It would have been better for that game. But Syracuse game this year was actually a pretty big game within the ACC, and it was tight to late in the fourth quarter, and Clemson got a bunch of phantom.
You know, they're kind of –
penalty play.
I know their championships aren't that far in the rearview mirror, but there's been an undercurrent of –
they're giving off strong early 2000s Tennessee
vibes.
Yeah,
they're spoiled. Dabo hates that they're spoiled. The expectations are too high. And you've kind of been feeling that for a while.
Former was, Russ. Well, he's run out of All-American quarterbacks. And now he's, you know, I mean, this freshman they got was decent, but he's not Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence. I mean, that's a whole nother ballgame, man. When you run out of those guys. I mean, reality sets in a little bit. You know, we're not going to be in the playoffs every year.
Yep.
A resurgent Tennessee does not help Clemson at all.
At all. And I hope they fall on hard times, even though I live amongst these Virginia Tech fans up here. And, you know, I enjoy them not winning, you know, so I don't want to see them start winning again. But I heard y'all talking the other day about Derek Wolfe. The guy that's microdosing on shrooms and taking Adderall.
Yeah.
You know,
played
in
for
NFL
Botch.
Games.
Uh-huh.
Did you hear him on Joe Rogan?
No, I've not.
Oh, man, you need to it's really entertaining. I mean, this dude's 6'9", 300 pounds, and he's a Viking, man. I mean, he's this Norwegian dude. I mean,
Rogan trying to get him to do DMT on the air.
Well, I mean, he already does all that stuff.
Jump in the isolation tank with me, bro.
Those guys are – man, those NFL D linemen are – it's another breed, man. It's like people talking about Jalen Carter at Georgia. I mean, to me, if I'm an NFL team, crazy is a position-specific trait I'm looking for in defensive linemen when I'm drafting.
Yeah, I mean, his problem is he showed up so out of shape that he couldn't go through drills.
You don't want to see that. No,
they are more than willing to put up with a lot of antisocial personality traits.
Yeah, it's like Orgeron said, we don't want angels or whatever.
Well, you could be crazy and still be pretty smart and conscientious. You just don't want lazy, which is what
you can't show up fat.
Well, the Titans got with Isaiah Wilson, and you kind of. Jalen Carter's giving off those vibes.
He does sports radio now, Russell, in Denver. And he was late for his sports radio show because he had shot a state record mountain lion, 200-plus pound mountain lion with a bow and arrow. He came in for his sports radio show with mountain lion blood and everything up all over him, you know. I mean, he was crazy.
And he smokes toad.
Yeah, he's microdosing, going hunt mountain lion. I mean, the guy's he's insane. He's a Viking.
I'll have to
go check that pot out.
600-700 years ago, he would have invaded the village and put you on a stake and raped your old lady, man. That's what that's his bloodline.
Okay.
So, but anyway, Rick Barnes, it's the most stupid, idiotic takes I've ever heard. I mean, you can criticize a guy without saying he should be fired. I mean, he's won like, I don't know how many 25 win seasons we've had, but I think he's got like half of them, you know?
I mean, I love Brad and La Follette and some of the other ones that like I love these people, but they've lost the plot, as they say across the pond, Big Josh. They've gone nutso.
Yeah, I mean, he sucks in March. That's true, but that's a long way from firing him. I mean, how we beat Duke to make the Sweet 16? I know it's not the Final Four, but we played in one damn Elite Eight in the whole history of the program. It's stupidity.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Anyway, hey, good show. See you guys. Y'all hang in there.
Thank you, Josh. Let's get Geraldo in here before the top of the hour. What's up, Geraldo?
Sir, I'll be very quick. I just want you to know off the top of my call that I love you more than my actual father. I just want to establish that before I jump into this revelation that I've had. Guys, South Carolina is the most important game on the schedule in the first half of the season. It's more important than Florida, and it needs to be a raucous environment when they come to town, and I'm sure it will be.
Uh-oh.
Also,
How raucous, Geraldo?
Just actually dangerous. Actually dangerous is what it needs to be. Also, we will have one loss as Georgia comes into our stadium in November. We will have one loss to Alabama. Other than that, we will be undefeated. As they come, riding high, because they will also be undefeated, we will beat Georgia in November in Neyland Stadium, and we will go to the playoffs.
Playoffs?
This year. I love you, sir. I love you. Goodbye.
I want so desperately to believe that he knows what he's talking about there at the end, but his stalker-like obsession is starting to creep me out.
Like, it was weird, yeah.
It was cute at first. I don't know, man. It's kind of weird.
It's all right. It's all there.
It was cute. It was funny.
It's still
funny. Now
it's
like I hear a bump in the night. I'll be wondering.
He could be like your Smithers. Smith.
Yeah, I wake up in bed and he's like staring over me with a butcher knife.
Even worse, just sitting in a chair next to your bed, just staring.
No one can.
Just staring at you.
So weird. You got to be so weird. Where do we get these people, Bear?
I don't know.
Our callers. We none of these people call our show.
Big Josh had a tremendous phone call, sir.
It is, but he's talking about smoking toad and killing mountain lions and everything. Why can't we just have a normal sports conversation? Do we have listeners like that who just want that, or do they want to hear the toad smoking?
I mean, you ask me these questions.
Bizarre professions
from time to time.
Of love, the calling for the heads of our basketball coach who just beat Duke to go to the Sweet 16.
I feel like this is the environment and the show that you've encouraged and nurtured over the years, Russell.
That's absolutely not true. I just want to talk sports, man.
Look in the mirror, buddy.
I just want to talk sports. I just want to come in here and talk X's and O's and figure out what the depth chart's going to look like. That's all I want. I want to talk about microdosing and killing 200-pound mountain lions. It's weird. Stay with us. Hour number 3 of The Drive coming up.